Really concerns me the potential effects of the governor's budget on our municipalities and the economy of Alaska. Nobody knows how that's going to play out right now. It certainly does play into the agency's perspective on how we load forecast and the risk with that, and just, you know, load forecasts are almost directly correlated a lot of the time with population inflows and outflows. So watching that very closely, and I think that's one you have to stay tuned to see what happens, right? So I won't go into that any further. Maybe just mention briefly the state-specific roadless rule. I talked to some of my internal sources, and that appears to still be moving along with the recommendations that the task force size on created. Those have been fed over to the federal side, and are working through the draft EIS process over there. I expect our committee will probably be reconvened sometime over the course of the next couple of months to maybe weigh in on where they ended up there. So with that, I'll leave that. If anybody has any questions, more than happy to answer them.
Any questions for Trey?
Yeah, I'm sorry, what did you just say?
Nobody heard, so they don't feel it.
Thank you. That brings us down to item 13. Item 13A, Operations Manager Report. Clay?
All right. We're about to get whistled bit, so I'll try to keep this as brief as possible. So I guess for the benefit of the newer board members in respect to the Tidewater Road access to Tidewater project, access to the Tidewater plant has always been kind of problematic in that it's either by air or by boat, and weather governs the air access and the tide governs the water access, and the water access is also further made problematic by the silting that we get out of the river there. And so a road as an alternative to that has always been kind of considered as a possible option. A couple different road options have been looked at, but we've had trouble coming up with a good a valid price tag. Oh, excuse me. Need me to start over?
No. Okay. Keep going.
Anyways, so we're basically looking to validate which of the two road options might be the best bet for the agency, and with a comparative value in respect to the dredging. And so at this point, we do have a task order. We do have some movement on this. We've got a task order with R&M Engineering here, right here in Ketchikan, and they're in the process of evaluating those two road options with the comparative to the dredging. And when they get done with that, we should have a pretty good idea what it's going to take to get a road in there, and which would be the most cost-effective option. And we'll bring that information to the board, and we'll decide which way we want to go from there. So the ATV use on the Tidy Transmission System, also known as the Argo permit. The recent government furlough didn't do us any favors there. Kind of shut this whole thing down for a month or more. But as soon as they got back to work again, the ball was in the Forest Services court, in particular Mr. David Rack, with the special permit administrator there with the Wrangell District. Anyway, Mr. Rack had a chance to go through the more recent submittal from Meridian, the most recent draft, and he and I actually had some time to sit down before I caught on a plane to go get some training there, and we spent about an hour or two going through this with a red pen, and he recommended a bunch of different changes that would help help us and help the Forest Service as well. In the end, we felt like we had something that is probably going to be ready for signing. At the moment, this has been sent back now with red lines to staff at Meridian Environmental, and they will go through, make those changes, and hopefully we'll have a done deal on our hands. So anyway, unfortunately, Meridian at the moment is stuck handling a FERC permit that they have a timeline on, so we're held up by the feds again, you might say. But anyway, it is making some progress. Marker ball project. During last spring's early annual line flyby, Mr. Henson and I noticed some marker balls missing on the Tyee Lake, or excuse me, the Eagle River crossing. And anyway, the replacement balls have been ordered, and at this point in time, that project is out to bid, and we plan on having that work take place during the scheduled line outage. Another kind of big deal project, it seems like we've been dancing around this thing for as long as I can remember, and that's the TSV actuator pistons. That's turbine shut-off valve, for those of you that haven't been in on this yet. But those goofy-looking horseshoe things right there are hydraulic pistons that are water-operated, and they're used to open and close the huge ball valve that allows water in and out of the turbine at the end of the penstock. These play a very, very important job. And unfortunately, the only place you can get these made is across the pond. And so the Austrian firm Andritz Hydro, who made them originally, these are over 35 years old now, we contracted with those to build replacements. The ones that we have in place right now started to leak. There's a chrome finish on them. We had looked at a bunch of different options to try and weld them and repair them and everything else, and every expert that we had consulted with on this kind of shook their head and stepped away from it. And in the end, this was the only way that we could really guarantee that we could fix these things with the outcome that we wanted in the end without having to go through and completely re-engineer it. These ones had worked flawlessly for, well, for a good 30 years anyway before they started getting some minor seepage. So anyway, at this stage of the game, once these are replaced, we've bought ourselves at least another 30 years or more. Anyway, this work is planned, is scheduled during the annual spring outage as well.
So, Clay, on those pistons, does the corrosion happen on the portion that, I guess, stays in the water bath?
Right at the seal point. It's right at the seal point, and it's kind of external. You can't really see the part that always stays inside, but the portion that is exposed, it is just right at the edge where it starts to come in inside the seals there. These are a very unique thing. I could not for the life of me wrap my head around how they would machine those, but and every place that we talked to on the entire West Coast and East Coast and all over the U.S., there wasn't anybody that we could contract to try and either make a new set or repair the ones that we had or anything like that. So anyway, we're getting some movement there. Submarine cable ROV inspection. As most of you are well aware, we contracted with ITP Subsea of Vancouver to do a survey of our submarine cables, and we've covered this in the last couple of meetings here. We've been waiting for a full and complete report from them. We just recently got our fourth draft, and it looks like they've pretty much got it in order, but pending a chance to sit down with the rest of the staff here and review that together to make sure that nothing's being missed. You don't really want to delve into it too deeply, other than to say that we feel like we're there and we should be able to elaborate it in full once we have the whole thing in front of us and can share it in completion with the entire board. Cleveland helipads. We had some money budgeted for repairing a series of pads up on the Cleveland Peninsula, but later on last season we had a chance to go out and do site visits, discovered that many of them were in such tough shape that they simply were not worth repairing. And so replacing them is the next option. We have 11 spare pads sitting in inventory, but we got to do a site survey and come up with an engineering plan and so forth to get the old ones out and put the new ones in. And right now we have a task order with Tompkins Engineering of Ketchikan to go out there and review the helipads and identify which ones need to be replaced and come up with a proper plan for their replacement. So we'll be getting on that in the spring here. Met Tower data collection, our windmill. The guys are actually going out to the marine terminals today, and we should be getting another data sample from our South Mitkoff Met Tower. And last we saw of that, the return was somewhat minimal, but right now is the time of year when the wind really blows over there, so I'm thinking that this cycle is going to be the one that either makes or breaks that location. If it doesn't prove out there, then we'll probably look at finding a different location for that data logging setup there. We've been looking, we have received another additional package, and our plan is to set one up in here, right here in Ketchikan. And Bobby spent a number of years working up at the landfill there and recommended that we take a look at that location up there, and we have done that, and golly, it sure does look like the wind cycles through there real well. And so right now we're looking at some different options of getting a tower up there. We looked at some of the radio and cell towers up there, but so far the options for cohabiting on the cell tower doesn't appear to be a very cost-effective plan, so we're going to take a look at one of the radio towers that's there, and if we can access that, great. If not, we've got a 30-meter tower sitting in inventory, and if we can get access to a piece of ground, we'll set up our own and we'll go that route. Wood pole testing. Any questions on that one? Wooden pole testing. So we purchased an IML PD600 resistograph, and basically it's a boring drilling tool that bores about a 16th inch diameter hole through the center of a wooden pole. And it measures the effort it takes to actually turn the bit and the pressure to penetrate. And it goes through, and if it encounters a soft spot, it measures how soft that is, and you get a reading on a nice little graph on the side of the tool. And I just recently went to resistograph school, and pretty interesting tool. You can actually measure the growth rings inside of a pole with the thing. It's actually that accurate. And anyway, so our plan is to be doing some pole testing on Mitkoff. Mitkoff, you can order the guinea pigs over there. And we plan on integrating that into the annual outage this spring. And so we have about 22 poles currently scheduled to test, and at various levels on the pole. Poles in our neck of the woods are known for rotting on the top, not on the bottom. And so it's going to take a lineman to go up while the line is de-energized and sample different locations. And then we can store that, download that information onto a laptop and move on to the next one. So we should have a really good idea of the integrity of those poles. SEPA landing craft. During last year's operating season, this was our second season on a matched pair of 350 Mercury Verados. We started having issues with power heads. We lost one, we thought it was an anomaly. We lost the second one, we started thinking we had an issue. And the local dealer that provided the engines went through, and they changed out the fuel system and tweaked a few things, and were sure that they had probably addressed the issue that we had. We got the thing back in the water again, ran it around for a while, and I don't think we'd made, I think we got an additional 20 hours out of it before the first power head blew again. And this got the interest of the factory and everybody else. Poured through the engines, looked them over. They did a little, pulled the heads off and so forth. Anyway, got the newer power head on, took it out, and during sea trials, they noticed that it appeared to be quite a bit of water coming around the backside of the engines, spray from the trim tabs. Of note, we had to modify the stern of the vessel to fit these bigger motors on here. And so one of the characteristics of the newer, more high horsepower motors is that they're supercharged and they suck a ton of air. And so the consensus from the dealer there was that by all appearances that they were sucking water in from the back end and into the engines, and we were basically losing pistons as a result of that. So we've taken the vessel to back to Svensson's, and as you see in the pictures, they made modifications to the spring. And they just took that thing out last week, earlier this week, they finally got the thing in the water. Took a while because everything was frozen up, but they were able to go out there and perform sea trials with it, and are proud to report that the back end of the engine is pretty much dry now, and that they think that problem has been taken care of by the modifications that we've done. So, anyway, moving on to the Tidy Lake report, got some basic bullet points of some work that we've been doing out there. Not if we need to go through those in any kind of great detail. And then the Swan Lake report is attached. So, any questions?
Any questions? Thank you, Clay.
Welcome.
Brings us on to item B, Power System Specialist Report. Ed?
What's not in the report, if there's stuff in here that you'd like to hear more about, I'll you can ask a question, but I'll go back to the review that we did at Swan Lake with the Bureau of Reclamation. We're now doing an operations and maintenance manual review and rewrite from that to bring that up to date. And we're going to use that rewrite in O&M manual to rewrite our MAPCON preventative maintenance program. So that's in play right now. Part 12 is in place. That's going to be completed in 2019, December. So I'm working on that as well. The Swan Lake stuffing box, any question? We pass an R&R for that today. This is a deferred maintenance item. If we remember, we talked about having governor issues out at Swan Lake in our last meeting in Petersburg. What I found when I got on site and we started doing some mechanical review is that the power ring bushings are completely wore out on both units, which has let the power ring drop down onto the wicket gate control arms, and they're just running metal to metal, so we've got some major repair to do on it. And Steve, this is part of our, we're not going to defer maintenance, this is going to be a priority to get this done. So I was in touch with Lidestroid, who is the original manufacturer of this end, of the turbine end of the units. I think I've got parts located to come out of Czechoslovakia. 4 month leeway on them. That's that portion of it. Swan Lake wastewater system, that's done. We've got a ADEC permit to operate on that project. So that's complete now. The lake access ladders, those are going to be completed whenever we get snow off the ground out there. BAM's ready to go with that. That's the contractor that's going to install those. Lake access, that's okay, I just talked about that. The HPU at Tai, that's another maintenance item. That jet gate's got to come back out. We're going to take the HPU and move it topside. So that project's in play as well. And then the flashboard trigger mechanism, completed a letter to FERC last week. In response, we're going to install a new accumulator on the fourth kicker, which will keep the wicket gate or the kickers loaded on the flashboard gates, and hopefully put our flashboard gates back into service.
So Ed, what kind of telemetry do we have on that gate to know, is there something that,
on the gate,
or on that trigger mechanism, is there anything other than just sight?
No, we've got a load cell on the trigger mechanism themselves that's had issues in itself. It's right now is in alarm, even though the we don't have it in SCADA, so it's not being monitored. We don't have any historical. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when I found the trigger partially tripped, what had happened is thermal expansion last summer moved the kickers an eighth of an inch uphill, and then the contraction, they never returned. to reload the trigger mechanism. The trigger is weighted by a water bucket. That water bucket was overweighted, which caused the trigger to have unbalanced lifting forces on it, and it lifted until it reached the center breaking point of the trigger. So what we've done now is redesigned the trigger lever, added an additional 121 pounds to that lever to neutralize the bucket weight, and put this accumulator in, which will load the kickers back up onto the trigger. Initially, the design was that there's cables that were supposed to load off of the kickers up to the panels themselves. What we found out is that those cables don't have enough sufficient forces on them to pull the bearings off their pedestals back into position. So this accumulator will keep loads on the trigger, and the cables will be there only for when loading other panels, so they don't fall out of position.
Thank you. Any other questions? Brings us down to 13C, Director of Engineering and Technical Service Report. Robert.
Aren't you guys tired of hearing me yet?
Not yet.
Nobody?
After this, maybe.
Maybe. After this, we know what we're doing. I'm going to start with Tiny Microwave. Tiny has a single point of failure right now for communications, always has. They only have a microwave system out there. So when you call out to Tiny, it has to go over a microwave, Burnett Peak, off of reflector, down to the system. Down to the powerhouse there. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, they lost all comms. They didn't have a telephone to even call them on. They have backup emergency communications, a satellite phone, and they have a radio to wrangle. We were able to get a hold of them and discuss operations and how they can communicate with Swan Lake and keep the system working. But the point of this is the microwave being, it only takes, and this happened back in 2011 as well, where just the windstorm caused one of the reflectors to bend. And we were down for quite a while with communications. Sent out AP&T to find out what the problem was. They tuned the radios. AP&T thought it was the radios themselves, but they did some tuning on them, looked at it, and they said it was actually pretty, they were in really good shape. We did find some ice on one of the antennas, or one of the dishes, and the whole point of this is we've got satellite comms figured out at Swan Lake. We've got redundancy. We've got a HughesNet high-speed satellite. We have a redundant one, the existing one. We're moving in to do the same thing at Tai. Got all the wiring done. All the parts are laid out, and I had a phone call just like 30 minutes ago on getting a local satellite company to get out there to get the done. So there'll be redundancy out of Tai soon. This was a big hot topic, the isochronous motor at Swan Lake, and whether or not we could run Swan Lake in isochronous. As Ed mentioned, we went through and we were doing a hydraulic analysis. Then we had an algorithm built to identify the oscillation in the governor and do something about it before it oscillates out of control. But it was really just a temporary fix to the hydraulic analysis to find out what the problem really was. But with Ed's inspection, something that we should have found a long time ago during our normal annual maintenance, is when you're trying to tell that governor to move fast and it's binding up and kind of jerking like this, it gives bad feedback to the governor. So Ed's ordered all the parts, and we're going to get this replaced here this June.
Probably not.
Maybe not.
4 months out on the parts.
4 months?
4 months.
So it might be a while before we see Swan Lake work in isochronous. As a heads up.
And that's 4 months out for unit one.
For unit one.
We make sure that we have all the right parts, and then we'll turn around and start on unit two.
Okay. Yeah, typically this is found from the operation and maintenance crew when you do your rounds and when you do your annual maintenance. I don't, not quite sure how you found that, but Ed found it.
I opened it as I.
Let's see, governor pressure systems, that's an R&R project, it's underway. One like distribution valves controller manifold, you can see it's kind of a cool design here. That's complete, the design's complete, manufacturing right now is being done. That should be installed here in June. Flooring station service project, that's an excellent project. We had contractors come out to Swan Lake last week. Was it last Wednesday or the Wednesday before? I think last Wednesday. And two contractors are looking like they're on board. We had a conference call yesterday. Sounded like there was a lot more than just two, but we did have a mandatory site visit, so they were required to come to site to be able to bid. That project's underway. We should be seeing proposals here within, what?
March 11th.
March 11th. It'll be interesting to see what we get. Really interested in the cost, because we had an independent consultant do the cost estimate on it so that we can come out for this bid, and that's what the board voted on for a dollar threshold. So it'll be interesting to see how these two contractors are highly competitive, how their costs come in. It's a fun picture. You guys maybe saw this before with this guy right here. He's flying a kite, and you see that kite? That's kind of some of the fun stuff we do, but that's the Tidy Lake RF modem. That is complete. We got the fiber connection done from the satellite pad to the Tidy powerhouse, and so now we just need to get it integrated in the SCADA. That's it.
So Robert, under the switchgear, what kind of switchgear is that? Do we designate a brand?
Yeah. Yeah, we specify Eaton switchgear, Magnum DS type switchgear.
Okay, I just didn't know how many manufacturers were out there and if we were just looking for whatever they would offer.
That was a real key and important part of this contract was that we get equipment that we know that is good equipment, and it's a design build project. So if you just give a contractor the free will to design how he wants, you're going to get the cheapest and easiest. So we did a pretty much a 30% to 50% design before we put it on the street. I think the specifications alone were 180 pages.
So. Okay. Thank you.
I make a comment.
Yeah.
I just wanted to take a second to recognize Robert here. He spent a lot of time working on the specs for this particular project, and it's a big project. It's going to be very expensive, and the key to a good bid return package is the actual spec. So just wanted to recognize your lengthy efforts there and attention to detail.
Thank you.
You're here.
So that brings us down to calendar year 2019 meeting dates. So the next one looks like March 28th. So put that in your calendar. Bring this down to director's comments. We'll start with Bob.
Well, I want to thank Robert for all the work he's done here, cleaning out what he's done today, and incredible work that's been done to date on forecasting. And my crystal ball isn't anywhere near as good as he is, so I thank him. And I would hope, looking at the future, I would hope in the future that soon we'll begin to look at, some alternative energy, some short-term projects that add capacity to what we're doing. And I know Trey and I've done a little bit of talking about it, that we come back and we're willing to, or at some point here we can make some investment and maybe have some payback during these really tight times, And that's about all I've got.
Robert.
I think the discussions today have really put a fine point on discussions that needed to be made, and as that's been in the background for a while. It's been a long time in coming, and I appreciate everybody's candor and willingness to work together, not only as a SEPA representative, making the agency whole, but, you know, protecting our member utilities. So, thanks.
Thank you. Steve?
Thanks to staff for organizing the meeting once again. Went well.
Thank you. Lisa?
I too appreciate the opportunity to have had these discussions, and I very much look forward to Trey and the staff getting together and coming back with some policy and other recommendations moving forward so that we can make sure that we're not in this circumstance again, based on, as Joel said on the phone to me at one point, let's not waste a good crisis. Let's get some good comes from this. So I appreciate the discussion as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Carl?
With Lisa, I think it was a good meeting.
Thank you. Cliff, what do you know?
A lot more than I did this morning.
Oh, I'll get back.
Yeah, it's very enlightening. I appreciate being here, and I definitely appreciate staff's work and what we've seen so far, the interaction in the communities. Look forward to the next meeting.
Thank you. Andy, give me your last word. What do you got?
I thank everybody, too, for the candor and getting this stuff out coming up, a way to navigate for the year to come here. So I got a suspicion this one may be a repeat of last year. So great that we got something down to navigate through it.
Thank you. I'd like to thank everybody for their hard work and understanding through this whole process. It's difficult, but necessary, and I think that we made a lot of headway today. So thank everybody. Thank you, staff. All the documentation, all the work you did to put this together for us to have the information we needed to move forward, I appreciate that. Anybody have anything else before we adjourn?
I don't want to miss a moment here.
Okay.
I just want to thank all the board members for reviewing all the material put before you. It's voluminous in many, many different ways, and it just is really... it's great and gratifying to, you know, be able to work hard, put it before you guys, and have you metabolize it and ask really great questions. So thank you.
Now I have a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Good standing.
Thank you.